Welcome to Who's Talking. This is D.G. Martin. My guest is Carter Wrenn. Carter is a longtime Republican consultant, a fixture, somebody said, in North Carolina politics. I hope he'll talk a little bit with us about the future of the Republican Party and the future of politics in North Carolina. I got started, Carter, welcome. I almost said you were the oldest rat in the Republican barn, thinking back to Thad Urey, it just didn't pop out. But you're the oldest rat in the Republican barn right now, I think.
Well, I may be, I don't know. Certainly be in the top 10.
In any event, you're a pretty highly respected or highly feared Republican consultant or candidate consultant because of a record of a pretty strong record of helping people succeed. But every time I talk to you, I find out that you know some things that I don't know, or you've considered things that I don't know. And there's a whole bunch of stuff that has happened in the last few days that have an impact on politics. And, we just read that Rush Limbaugh has died. And some people on the Democratic side would put you and Rush as at the top of their villain list of people who know how to influence people to go in the wrong direction. But that's not fair. How would you size up Rush, taken respectfully since he's just died, but what kind of impact did he have on politics in general and particularly on politics in North Carolina?
I think he had a big impact. You know, I met him. We had lunch together years ago in the 90s when he was in Raleigh, and he was a affable, unpretentious man. But he was a voice for traditional old-fashioned conservatism. And he was the first person that really established a media, a network using radio, where he talked to other conservatives about his ideas and how he saw things. And he was pretty unique in that regard. For years, it was just Rush Limbaugh. Now, today, you've got Fox News, and you've got Sean Hannity, and all these other radio show hosts, and you've got, you know, sort of the mirror image of that on the Democrat side of the spectrum. But for years, it was just Rush Limbaugh. And he was sort of a beacon or a voice for conservatives that talked to him about issues and things that were going on. I think he had a huge impact over the last, say, 25 years, 30 years, really. I heard he started in 1988 or 89.
Did his influence wane as the other conservative voices and Fox News rose up, and then, as you pointed out, there are parallel developments on the left side?
No, I don't think you could say it waned. He always had a huge audience, and of all the radio personalities, he probably had a bigger audience than anyone. So there were more voices, and there were more people speaking. I mean, for years, if you turned on talk radio, there was one conservative voice. It was Rush. But now, you've got talk radio stations that have conservative voices all day. But he was sort of the leading one. I wouldn't say he waned at all.
There are some features of Rush that he knew how to, like former President Trump, he knew how to talk to passionate populist conservatives. I mean, he knew how to rev them up. He knew what it was that they would respond to, and in a kind of angry or disappointed or disgusted thing. He knew how to, in the same way that President Trump or former President Trump did.
Yeah, he shared their passion, and he was good at articulating it. And, he didn't really go too far. I mean, he didn't go over the line, but he shared the passion, and he was good at explaining it and articulating it, voicing it.
Did you listen to him, or you just followed him from a distance?
You know, I listened to him a lot. When he died, one of my daughters called my wife and said, "Gosh, Rush Limbaugh died. I remember when we were in school listening to him on the radio with Dad in the car."
When you were driving them to school, they'd have to listen to Rush.
Well, usually my wife drove them to school. But I listened to him a lot for years. In the last few years, I've sort of stopped paying as much attention to radio as I used to.
I'm
more likely to listen to the classical music station.
We're getting old.
Yeah, we're getting old. I think that's all we're doing.
Well, is there anybody on the conservative side who will be anointed successor to Rush? Is there any?
I don't know. You know, you would expect that there's that 3-hour time block every day from noon to 3 o'clock when his show was on. And you would expect that radio networks are going to look for somebody to fill that vacuum. But who that would be, I don't know. I don't see anybody that has his sort of unique combination of talents.
Well, how am I going to answer this question? This is not something you would consider, is it? Is your strong point being able to fire people up like Rush and the president did, or do you just tell those guys what it is on the minds of people that might, make for a favorable response to a little bit of incitement, I guess?
You know, I don't think I have his talents. Plus, he had a passion for what he did. I mean, he's like a lot of men who are successful. He loved what he did. He had a passion for it.
Yeah.
And they'll need to find somebody that shares that passion and those talents. And if they came to me, I'd say, "I believe you're barking up the wrong tree."
Oh, well, if I were going to do it, I would want you, if you weren't going to do it and I were going to do it, I'd want you with a direct contact into my ear to tell me what kinds of things people who would be listening to that program would want to hear. So let me push you on that. If I were, and you don't have to really imagine, if somebody like me said, I want a radio show or TV show that appeals to the kind of people that who are so passionate followers of Rush, then you would say, "Well, DG, here's some things you better not forget. Here's some things you'll need to address." I mean, could you advise me in that way, couldn't you?
Yes, or I could try to. Yeah. I don't know how much good it would do you, but I think there are a couple of things that are important right now. I think there are a lot of people in both parties, and even more among independent voters, who are unhappy, disgusted, disillusioned with politics today. And I think that, for years, politics has always been about confrontation and conflict. When you and I were younger, you had different candidates, Republicans and Democrats, and the campaigns were tough. Jim Hunt's campaign, Jesse Helms' campaign, George Bush running against Albert Gore, Obama running against McCain. But there was a little bit of mutual respect, not of the people's opinions, but I think people used to look at it and say, "Well, he's dead wrong. I disagree with him, but I respect his right to his opinion." And so they fought, they criticized each other, But there was a sort of an acceptance that he's got a right to be wrong. And I think that's sort of faded today. I think that there's so much dislike between the, say, Trumpsters and anti-Trumpsters, or Democrats and Republicans, or parts of them, that there's no "I respect your right" there anymore. It's "you're a villain and I want to you know, kick you in the head." And I think that's led to a lot of people being unhappy and sort of disillusioned with politics. So one of the first things I'd say is explain that we can disagree without hating each other.
Yeah, but Carter, I mean, I'm with you on all of that, but that was what, I mean, Rush, this was what the secret of, one of the secrets of Rush was, that instead of encouraging everybody to respect each other as they disagreed, it was, don't respect them. They're a bunch of communist jerks, and here they're trying to take us down the path of socialism. And you know, we they're fools, and we don't respect them. I mean, it did what Rush did not foster any respect for the other side. It was tear them down, didn't he?
Well, I think the distinction, and it's subtle, but it's your right to your opinion. In other words, I didn't agree with Jim Hunt. I didn't like his opinions. I criticized a lot of them. But I never questioned his right to have those opinions. And so I think that's, and I think Rush Limbaugh had that too, that he didn't agree with the liberals or a liberal or Joe Biden or Obama. But he did understand their right to be wrong, or their right to opinions he thought were wrong. I think that's the thing that's faded away. It's not a matter of, you know, I respect your opinion and I'm going to like you for it. It's a question of, I respect your right to have that opinion. And I think that's the thing that's faded. It's sort of elusive to get your arms around.
Yeah.
But today it looks like to me that everybody wants to shut up the other guy.
Well, you and I've got to shut up for just a minute while we take a break.
Right.
If you join us late, I'm visiting with Carter Rend, who's a longtime and very smart Republican political consultant, and he's taken on the task of educating me to help me try to understand what's going on in the political world, and he and I'll be right back. Welcome back to Who's Talking. This is D.G. Martin, and my guest is my friend and political adversary sometimes, Carter Rend, who's trying to help me make sense of all of the news developments that we're hearing recently, or the developments of all the thing from Rush Limbaugh's death. And we're going to talk about the political situation in the Republican Party. But there was something that we missed in our conversation that led off of Rush. What did we miss, Carter?
Let me try to clarify what I was saying this way. You know Gary Pierce.
I do, yeah.
Gary was Jim Hunt's political brain. And I met Gary when Hunt ran against Helms. And when we met, it was ice in the room. I mean, we were negotiating the debates, and I looked across the table and I saw a devil. And I saw him once more after we did the debates about 8 years later. Then I met him again about 8 years after that. And the third time we met, it was at a lunch. And he said something and I frowned and he smiled and a friendship took root. And I got to know him over the next 20 years. Actually got to know him real well over the next five. And what I found out was that he and I didn't agree on anything, but he was a decent man. And that made all the difference in our relationship. We could argue, we could, you know, fight with each other, but there was a mutual respect there because he really believed what he believed. I thought he was dead wrong, but he was sincere. And beyond that, he was just a decent man.
Yeah. Well, the partnership that y'all developed was inspiring to me when you would write on the same and out of the same outlet, different ideas. But that's kind of fallen by the wayside, hadn't it?
Yeah, that's what I'm talking about when I say that's sort of been lost.
Uh-huh.
And that's something I think we need to restore. We need to repair that breach. It's fine to disagree, but if you can do it the way Gary and I learned, and we didn't know that for years when we first met, but that makes a big difference. I mean, that makes us, we can live in the same country together then.
Well, I'm glad you do, and I love it when you guys lock horns about different issues, but do it with a smile. And that might just be that we're getting old. I don't know that we don't have the same passion that we did when we were young.
That could be part of it, but we still disagree. We still lock horns, but not with animosity.
Yeah. Well, let's talk. Let me move. There's the other thing that's hot on the table. And you almost want to turn your head from it, but this is the consequences of the president's, the former president's impeachment with in the Senate, where some Republican senators voted to convict the president or the former president, and our Senator Burr was one of them. And then, so that there's clearly a difference of opinion among some Republicans about what the former president did in those last days of his office. And then Senator Burr, like other senators who voted and representatives who voted in favor of impeachment, got immediately censured unanimously in North Carolina by the state's Republican committee. And I thought, well, how in the world are the Republicans going to repair this breach? Because there are a lot of Republicans that I know who are my friends, I guess. Maybe that's a special cadre who are pretty high on Senator Burr and think of him as a good Republican. And if they didn't agree with him about his vote on the Trump impeachment, they would not overlook it, but they would put it in perspective of his other accomplishments. So how are the Republicans going to deal with this breach?
You know, I think I'll probably get proved wrong about this, but I think that's something that happened. You had an explosion, but I expect that's just going to fade away. And I think that, I think Trump, all the stuff about the election was being stolen. An amazing number of my Republican friends absolutely agreed. I never did. And I thought it was a mistake. And, you know, when they had the explosion in Washington on January 6th, that was a terrible thing. And I think most people were just tired of all the howling and the carrying on. I think impeachment was just another political howl. I understand the argument, had to be done and it was right. But to me, it just was pouring gas on a fire that we needed to put out or let go out. And I think that the censorship of Burr is just more gas on the fire. And so I would just assume that if you disagreed with Burr, you disagreed with him, and you could say so. But what I'm hoping is that all this sort of hyper-bitter partisan politics will just sort of diminish some. Now, it may not, and we may have to live with it for a while, and we could do that. But to me, that would be the best thing that could happen, is just let everybody step back, take a deep breath, and calm down, and see if we can put some of the tension or emotion aside for a while.
All right, I'm going to try to do that while we take this break, but it's hard because you're getting me fired up again. But and I'll attack you after the break.
All right.
If you join us late, I'm visiting with Carter Wren, longtime Republican consultant, giving me counsel about how Republicans are going to deal with the challenges of the post-Trump era or the post-Trump presidency. Carter Wren, and I'll be right back. Welcome back to Who's Talking. This is D.G. Martin. I'm visiting with Carter Wren. We're talking about politics. He and I agree about a few things, but there are a lot of things we don't agree about. But he's been around longer than I have and more experience. Before the break, he said, best thing for us to do is just put aside all this January 6th, all of this controversy, impeachment, and calm down and let's just get things settled again. Do you really believe that, Carter?
Yeah, I think we need a break from the acrimony. I mean, I think that for the good of the country, we need to let things calm down or try to make them calm down a little bit. And, you know, impeachment, I understand the arguments on both sides, but I think basically the whole thing was a political. It was the motivation behind it was more political than anything else. Trump ended the election very unpopular with independent voters. And I saw one of his pollsters put out an analysis why Trump lost. And he basically said in 2016 he won independents. 2020, he lost about 10 points. That was the big change.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
In Georgia, I read the exit polls, and more Republicans voted than Democrats. It was 38 to 34 Republicans, 34 Democrats, 38 Republican, 34 Democrats. That means that the Democrat candidates who won got 57-58% of the independent votes. And in the exit polls, 58% of the independents disagreed with Trump when he said the election was stolen. So Trump was in a position where he was unpopular with independents. And this may be pessimistic, but I think all the impeachment was about, really, the motivation behind it was let's make the Republicans stand up and defend Trump one more time, and that'll hurt him with independence.
Mm-hmm.
So I didn't.
Well,
ultimately see it as a pursuit of justice. I saw it as a political goal.
Is putting aside the question of whether or not to bring impeachment. I tell you, this is where I'm probably further out of the mainstream, and you're in it, but. To me, the crime for Trump was not so much his association with the terrible events on January – or the violence on January 6th, but that January 6th gathering of people was just one of Trump's unsuccessful but could have been successful steps – to get around the idea that he lost a landslide election, and that what he was doing, if done in other circumstances by other people, he just created a pathway of here. If you want to just ignore what the people decided, here's the way you can do it. You can go to the state legislators and get them to appoint electors. You can create a whole false stories about voting machines and all of this. But what I accuse Trump of is it's not treason. But it is a attack on the American system that he knowingly knew it was destroying it, helping to destroy it. And I think, you know, impeachment's just a mild rebuke. I ought to use this firing squad for trying to tear down the American, you know, the American way of doing things. He had just no respect for it. And let me ask you this question, because I got to get off the soapbox. This is your soapbox, Carter. What do you think of that?
Well, I agree that the election is stolen narrative did a lot of harm. I mean, it was undermining a fundamental pillar of American democracy that we can trust the outcomes of elections. And I think that was harmful, very harmful. I guess where you and I would part company is what's the cure for the harm?
Mm-hmm.
Well, the fact is, the Republican legislators told Trump no. He wanted to throw out Biden electors in Michigan and Pennsylvania and Georgia, Arizona. They wouldn't do it. Those are Republican legislators in all those states that wouldn't do it. Republican judges ruled against him. He appealed to the Supreme Court. They told him no. In fact, despite his narrative, which a lot of people on the Republican side bought into, the structure of democracy held pretty tight. When they were counting the votes on January 6th in the Senate, Trump says to Mike Pence, throw out Biden's electors, and Pence said no. I give Pence a lot of credit for that. So in fact, we had a bad thing happen, but the system held together. The law held together. And so then the question is, do you correct the harm and set the thing back on the right course by having another shooting war and shouting match, or do you figure out a way to move on? That would be probably where you and I would disagree.
Yeah,
squad would just inflame the whole thing.
I think so, too. Well, I didn't really mean that. I have popcorn.
No, I know you were being.
But, the more I think about it, maybe the more I think that was the appropriate remedy for it. We think that this idea is going to go away. I think that Trump's going to be around for a while, don't you? I mean, you think he's just going to fade away now? And Republicans?
He could. And, you know, that's one of the questions for the Republican Party. You know, is Trump staying around? But ultimately, the cure to all those questions goes back to the ballot box. And, you know, in America, our ultimate solution to somebody that does something that's wrong is to vote them out of office or vote against them. And it's not to, you know, pillory them to death, but it's just everybody gets a vote and you get a chance to make your case as to why he's wrong and the voters ultimately decide it. And if Trump runs again, that's the ultimate case. I mean, that's the ultimate solution. And I think that with the Republicans, you've got the question of, does Trump want or not run or not? And beyond that, you've got this populist movement in America today in both parties. And if Trump doesn't run, it's still there in the Republican Party. Somebody, they're going to find someone else to be their leader. So the populism's not going away.
If you joined us late, I'm visiting with Carter Wren. We're agreeing on a few things and disagreeing on a few things as well, talking about the recent unpleasantness on January 6th and the association of President Trump with some of that, and then what's going to happen afterwards. He and I'll be right back after the short break. Welcome Welcome back to Who's Talking. This is D.G. Martin, and my guest is Carter Wrenn. Carter's a longtime Republican consultant, respected and feared across, respected by everybody and feared by Democrats. He's giving me some counsel about my thoughts about what's happened what's going to happen post-Trump. And what I wanted, if we've got time, Carter, is for you to give me ideas. If you were being paid by the Republican Party or the any Republican groups with respect to the upcoming midterm elections in 2022 and then the presidential election, which is already rising up for 2024. So, assuming that Trump doesn't come out of the woodwork and run again, who are some of the Republicans who might be candidates for president in 2020? In 2024.
Yeah. You know, you read that Ted Cruz is interested, Josh Hawley's interested, Nikki Haley's interested. I expect you'll have, sort of like in 16, you'll have seven or eight candidates. Marco Rubio could do it again. There are people on the, like Ben Sass, I think would be a potential candidate. I haven't seen where he's interested, but I think he'd be a potential candidate. So Hawley, Cruz, Haley are the ones that are most visible right now, but I expect you'll get a dozen different people in the presidential race. The thing to remember is that there's a, in the country today, there's sort of a strong populist movement. It's a river of people. And, you know, politics is really governed by rivers of people. And the populists in the Republican Party are basically working people. The global economy didn't work for them. They struggled along for a long time. They watched Washington politicians bail out Wall Street bankers, and they were struggling while that was going on. They became very anti-Washington. They didn't like the Republicans or the Democrats in Washington, and that was why they latched on to Trump. Well, that river of people is still there. And it is going to still be a powerful force in politics. And so I think you've got to factor that into the equation on the 2024 presidential primaries, because how those people go and who they support will be a pretty decisive element.
Do you think any of the people that you mentioned, the obvious senators who, and plus Nikki Haley, who would be considering running, have the ability to stir up that group like Donald Trump did?
Well, that's hard to say. I would think so, but the part of the problem is that that group of people, usually, you know, what defines candidates are issues. And people look at someone and they say, yeah, he's preaching the gospel I agree with, and support him. The populists have become so focused on Trump that it's almost a personality rather than issues. And I think that muddies the water in terms of, you know, who may emerge to, if Trump doesn't run, who emerges to follow
him? I'm going to interrupt you because I just think you're all on the wrong track here. You're arguing that Trump is fungible. And I'm thinking, I don't like Trump, but he is something very, very special whose ability, you know, to do all kinds of things, including doesn't have a love affair with the truth. But he's, as much as these senators that you mentioned might wish to be able to do that, they can't do it, can they? Trump is special.
I'm not saying that Trump is fungible. I'm saying the river of people is going to continue. And to me, Trump won because he was anti-Washington, pro-populist. But he lost in 20 because of character, the things you talked about, boasting, shading the truth, twisting facts, the way he handled coronavirus. He lost basically because of who he was, not what he believed. I think that if Trump decides not to run, what I would hope is that the issues come back into the focus, and the anti-elitists, the anti-Wall Street, the anti-Washington. And if that happens, then you'll get an election where they're going to look at people and where they stand on issues, and hopefully pick the one they agree with rather than pick somebody whose character and personality is going to ultimately undermine their own the goals the river has.
Well, this leads me to the question that I most wanted to ask you, and that is, and I think you're touching on it right now, and that is whether or not that the real reason for Trump's success was people like me, who seemed to be a little bit arrogant and know-it-all, got lots of fancy degrees, and and who do not appreciate the real struggle that some of the American working people are having. That it's really me that the anger of the Trump supporters is focused at, and when we try to explain to people in Chapel Hill why Trump was so powerful, we just kind of have to say, well, it's us. We're the people who are the folks that the Trump supporters are really angry with, and that they see Trump or Trump-like person as the person who can put us in our place. Am I wrong about that?
No, I think that's basically right. I think that if they look at Wall Street and they say, those people don't care anything about me. They ship jobs overseas. All they care about is money. They look at Washington and say, the elites control Washington. These politicians don't give a toot about people like me. And they look at cultural elites and they say, they're not on the same wavelength I am. And they're angry about all this because they're having a hard time. Working people, they've had a little better in the last couple of years, but if you look at coronavirus, they got hit pretty hard economically. And economically, they've been struggling for a long time. They've been sitting at kitchen tables on Friday nights, trying to avoid their wives' eyes, trying to pay their bills. And they struggle to make ends meet, and they're angry. The country has sort of moved in another direction from them. And I think there are a lot of people that don't understand those people's lives.
Yeah, Carter, it seems to me that you must be advising Biden, because he's trying to, I think he's trying to address some of the wisdom that you've given about those people who feel like they've been left behind. And that it is... I mean, I know you're not going to support Biden, but do you feel feel that he's well, on the right track responding in that way?
You know, interestingly, you've got a similar river of populists on the Democrat side. And they're culturally different from the Republicans. And their solutions are different, but they're angry at the elites and the rich people as well. And so... I think that's probably what Biden is responding to. But what would you call it, DG? The economic polarization of the country. It's real on both sides, in both parties.
Well, have you got any candidate in mind that you'd like to work for, either in 2022 or 2024?
You know, right now I'm just basically watching to see who steps forward that I think that's the leader we need, or that's the kind of leader we need. And, you know, I haven't made a decision about that yet. And in the state, you know, we've got the Senate race coming up. Right now, Mark Walker's running.
Laura Trump's running, maybe.
Well, they've talked about it. She's not running yet, but they've talked about she might run. Pat McCrory, a lot of people.
How about George Holding? Can you get him back into politics?
Well, I think George would be good if he would run, but I don't think he will. And some people are talking about Ted Budd, the congressman from out in the Piedmont, running. Those seem to be the four, you know, most talked about candidates.
Well, will you come back in a few weeks and talk about that topic, because you and I have run out of time now. But yeah. I'm much wiser and much open to other ideas than I was when we started, and I can always count on you to help me with that, Carter Wren.
Well, I don't think I was as clear as I would like to have been, but I did my best.
You're still pretty good, buddy. Well, our guest has been Carter Wren. I want to thank him so much for giving up his time, and I want to thank you for listening as well. And I hope that you'll tune in again, and we'll be back here before you know it.